Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two, that's James Hamm, I'm Colin Madsen. Jesse Tapia is hanging out with us today. Hanging out with you till noon, then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC. We were talking at the break, and I got that tweet to load from a journalist in Miami that I want to talk about. But Jesse, you were mentioning at the break, the movie theaters are too comfortable now.
Oh, yeah.
That's an elite take by you.
Yeah, I saw Captain America. I saw Captain America this weekend. I was trying to stay awake during the first part, just because I'm not even because the movie was that bad. I'm too comfortable here. Like, this is nice.
Mm.
That's it, bro. Like, I struggle to stay awake in movies, not because I'm like, oh man, I don't like this movie, but dude, you let me recline, get my feet up.
I used to
food, get some beer in me. Ugh.
Temperature's always nice in the movie theater too. It's not too cold. It's not too warm. Like, it's just perfect.
I used to go. Straight from shoot around and then go to the theater in downtown Sac in the downtown plaza area, the Doco. And I would go and watch a movie. Sometimes I'd fall asleep. Sometimes I wouldn't. But, you know, you got your bag like huddled up next to you so no one steals your stuff.
Yeah, James, I got to head to the movie theater. I got to get my nap in.
Yep. Yep.
Dude, it's the best napping place in the country. There's no better place to nap than a movie theater. And it's hella dark. Come on, man.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I could be totally enthralled with the movie. I'm going to fall asleep for 6 minutes at some point.
Yeah, then you're...
That's just the thing that's going to happen.
When you wake up, you know what? I'm ready to go. Let's get the rest of this movie. I'm ready now.
Exactly. Facts, dude. That's just it. I'm not going to go back to sleep. I'm just going to catch a little shut-eye real quick.
My wife will smack me because I'm snoring. I'm awake. You weren't.
Yeah.
You weren't awake. I could hear you breathing. Oh, Kyle, you're not here. We have a
heavy nap breath.
We have a band coming in right now to play at 11.
What?
We have a band coming in to play right now. Did we figure out who
this
was?
Behind Jesse?
They are behind Jesse. Yeah, they just walked in. This is Tom Montana. Is that what it is? I think that's what it is.
That sounds right.
Yeah, Tom Montana.
It's a 98 rock show.
It is, and I heard that they're really loud, although like he's a really cool dude, but they're going to be noisy. So we'll see how it goes.
Tom Montana is Tony's lesser known brother.
Joe's cousin.
It's always a funny thing, like having concerts like during our shows.
See, we've never had to deal with this because
funny?
It's true.
Is it funny?
You got to make it into a joke at this point.
Is funny the right word?
I always try to sneak out like very quickly so I'm not part of anything. But yeah, I'm intrigued to see how loud this is. It's they're supposed to be here at 11 doing their show, and I don't see a lot of other people here. I'm intrigued to see what happens. Like outside people. We don't have new outside people flooding into the building.
If you want to hear the latest from Tom Montana, you'll be able to vaguely hear it in the background of D'Lo and KC, which is coming up at noon. All right, James Hamm there. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jesse Tapia is riding with us today because I am in the home studio. We were talking about journalism and Howard Beck and how, you know, he started to say a thing and then didn't want to say it because he's afraid to get aggregated and he wasn't reporting it. And then it did wind up getting aggregated. Omar Kelly, who is a columnist for the Miami Herald, had a wild tweet over the weekend.
Uh-oh.
Because it's now coming out. Do you remember the whole Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin bullygate thing?
Yes.
Okay, so it's now coming out that like all the Jonathan Martin side of that was all like a lie.
Oh.
And I don't want to necessarily get into that, but here's what Omar Kelly, the columnist for the Miami Herald, wrote. This is a tweet on X, allegedly Twitter. Bullygate was the most painful period of my journalistic life. It was a never-ending onslaught of PR stunts from one team meant to fit an agenda, which was that Richie Incognito was a bad man and the Dolphins put Jonathan Martin in a horrible environment and made him want to quit football. Truth is, his heart wasn't into it. He didn't like being criticized. He wanted to go home. As a media member, you had to report things you knew were lies. My brother in Christ, you 100% do not have to do that as a media member. In fact, I would argue that your job as a media member is to be like, hey, the team's lying.
Oh my goodness.
Here's what's being said. Here's what the facts are. They're lying. What an insane thing to write on the internet.
That's absolutely wild.
We can see you, dog.
That's your credibility's gone. Like, it's
gone.
It's one thing to say, this is what somebody said. It's another thing to report it as if it's just like the only truth that's out there. Like, that's really bad. Like, oof.
Omar Kelly is not my favorite Dolphins writer. I will say that.
Well, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, it's just, and like I said, the entire Bullygate thing, I don't know enough about it to know exactly where that's gone. But Omar Kelly saying, as a media member, you had to report things you knew were lies is just bananas.
I think he's...
What a wild, wild thing to say.
He's not framing what he's trying to put out there the right... At least, I'm going to guess he's putting something...
Okay,
I think what he's trying to say is that you were being told things that you knew weren't true, but they were being like told in a press conference setting or whatever. And so you had to quote somebody and put out what they're saying as an answer. And like, if you don't have the response to refute it, then you are putting things out there that are untrue, but it's somebody else's voice. If you're reporting something that you know to be untrue, that you're just like saying, hey, this is happening, this is happening, this is happening, and you know it all to be untrue, then that's one thing. If you're going to a press conference and you're asking the question and they're saying an answer and you're taking their quote and you're putting it into a story, and even if you know it to be untrue but you can't prove it to be untrue, it's still something that you have to report as it's being said. You got me?
No, I get that. Yeah, but so you know it's not true, but you can't prove it.
Yeah, but it's not your idea. Well, because if you're a journalist, you need more than one source, you know, to say whether something's true or not. So, like, again, there are things that happen, like standing on an NBA floor that someone tells me that I know are just flat out untrue, right? And I'm not going to sit there and report what it is that they're saying that's just a, like, flat out lie. But there's also things that when you're... You know, when you go to a press conference, somebody can say something and you know from your understanding of a story that what they're saying isn't factually correct. And you can correct them if you've got enough information to correct them. But there are also certain things that you're just like, okay, I don't know how to report that what they're saying is a lie. And
then wouldn't you just not write it at all?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times you do.
If you know that Coach A says, player X is dealing with an ankle. I'm just making something up. Mm-hmm. Player X is dealing with an ankle injury, and you know that player X doesn't have an ankle injury. Wouldn't you just not use that quote?
Well, yeah, there is that, but you can say that according to the team, here's spokesman, he does have an ankle injury. You can say, according to my sources, that's incorrect.
Right.
But either way, if a team is saying that XYZ, I mean, part of your job is to say not to back up what they're saying, but to put into, like, it's going to be out on video. It's going to be everywhere else. It's to actually quote them and say, this is what they said. Like, I had a situation years ago where Marvin Bagley, I heard, was going to miss. He wouldn't be back until after the All-Star break. And we were... Okay. 2 or 3 weeks before the All-Star break, I wrote a story, went to go confirm with someone within the team, and I was told that's wrong. And I'm like, no, I don't think it's wrong. And it was like, no, it's wrong. And if you put that out there, then you're going to be proven incorrect. And I'm like, okay. So I had to back off the story because I'm not going to put out something that's factually incorrect about a specific player, right? Turns out, sure enough, he was out until after the All-Star break. And someone lied about what his injury was and what was happening. And so I got caught in the middle of this gigantic thing. When the eventual report came out 2 days before the All-Star break that Marvin Bagley, or 3 days before the All-Star, would return to play after the All-Star break, I vented in a very loud and boisterous way in the locker room to media relations. I lost my cool because the worst thing you can do in this situation is lie. And that's always been the biggest issue with me, is like, you can tell me you can't say what's going on. You can tell me, hey, that's, you know, as a team, we haven't decided what we're going to put out. Or you can say like, hey, look, we don't know what's happening. Or I personally don't know what's happening. The medical staff might know what's happening and I'll try to get you an answer, but there's nothing I can do. All of those things. What you can't do is lie in the situation, because trust is broken. And that's what a lot of, you know, that's what sources are. They're trust. It's you and another person, or multiple people, or someone gives you a bit of information. You take that information, you go and check it out with other sources. Next thing you know, you've created, you've had it backed up on multiple, like in multiple ways, and you understand that it's true. And so you run with it. But that's like, it's always muddied and dirty, especially in a situation like this. Now, to find out later that someone totally lied to you the entire time, and that you were putting something out there that was false, like if you played a part in saying all of these things, if you wrote these things that you knew were false at the time, then that's on you. But if things prove to be false after the fact, when you had sources telling you that this is exactly what happened and they just lied to you, that's tough.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what he meant, but the sentence, as a media member, you had to report things you knew were lies, just seems insane.
Yeah. And no, I agree.
Maybe it's what you're saying here, and like, man, he had something on background or something from one person that, or whatever the team was saying, just didn't add up, and he felt like, oh man, I gotta get this out, I guess. I don't know. That just doesn't...
No, it's tough. Doesn't look good. It's tough when someone gives you a press release and you know the press release isn't correct. You can put out the press release and say, according to the team, this, and not have anything to say outside of that. Or you can dive into why that's not true, if you've got the sources to back it up. And it's just a brutal position to be in.
Yeah, I don't envy it for sure. Speaking of stuff I saw on the internet, did you see what Kevin Durant said about NBA fans yesterday?
He always has something to say about NBA
fans. I need you to understand that I like Kevin Durant.
I do too.
I think Kevin Durant cares about basketball in a way that not a lot of people care about basketball. B, I think he's spot on. He said, quote, "I think it's more fun to complain about the NBA than to actually watch it." Crazy. Cancel All-Star Weekend and let's just give everybody a break since we're so miserable around this time.
Huh. Okay.
He's right, dude. Like, if all you're going to do is complain about All-Star Weekend and complain about the dunk contest and complain about the three-point shootout and, oh my God, Steph and Sabrina Ionescu didn't do their showdown thing again, and, oh my God, Caitlin Clark didn't want to do it, and, oh my God, there's nobody I know in the dunk contest, and then, oh my God, the game sucked so bad, it wasn't competitive. Like, all right, then just get rid of the damn thing. Just punt it altogether. If it's for fans and the fans all hate it, goodbye then.
I agree, and I also, like, I don't know that it helps you, or to combat Kevin's take, it helps you that Draymond Green is literally on your broadcast telling the same thing. Is literally saying how much it sucks and saying how, you know, all of these random things that you're like, oh boy. Yeah, that doesn't help your brand. But again, Kevin Durant has the cachet and, you know, like the long history of just like speaking his truth, that you're like, okay, I'm going to listen. And I don't disagree with him. Like the break, like I needed a break. There wasn't a Sacramento Kings player in it. And I took the weekend away from the game. I tuned in to watch because I had to go. I went on with Jake Gaden on and Brandon on Channel 13 over the weekend. So I had to at least have an understanding of what was happening in the game. But overall, I didn't want to touch anything basketball related because we just went through like a crazy trauma here in Sacramento where you're...
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, working like nonstop chasing a story of that's like huge magnitude. And so I get it. I get there are times where you just want to step away. And I think the players should have a longer adjustment period here. And guys like Kevin Durant, they get sent to All-Star Weekend. Like, I'm sure he would have rather raised his hand and said, I don't want to be there. And can you fill my spot? And they're like, no, you got to be there. It's like, no, I would prefer not to be. So, yeah, just give me 5 days, 6 days off so I can recover. And, you know, again, look at their team situation. It's a mess. And he probably feels the same way, like wants to get away for a week, but he can't because there's an event you got to go to. And there's 17 events within the event that you have to go to. And there's all of these things that you're required to go do and these media hits and all these things. And it just drags you down. You know, you can't get away, especially for someone who's an introvert like Kevin Durant.
He had more to say, and we will dig into that, as well as Tim Bontemps has a new straw poll out, a new MVP straw poll, we can dive into that because there's a couple interesting things in that I want to get into next. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insiders, and we're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. James Hamm there, Jesse Tapia hanging out with us as well. I'm Kyle Madsen from the home studio today. We're talking about Kevin Durant and his All-Star Weekend thoughts. Here's his reply to somebody, and this is the other kind of angle of this that I wanted to get into. He said, my point is fans complain about everything. Like, nothing is good enough for the fans right now. Only thing they enjoy is playoffs, trade deadline, free agency, and when players beef with each other. You think that's accurate?
Yes. No, I mean, like, there are a ton of fans that show up every single night to watch NBA basketball. And I think, like, to disregard those people, like, the really noisy minority, I think that you could say, like, yeah, that's all they care about is trade deadline, free agency, the draft, and playoffs. But I do think that there are a lot of other fans that show up. And I think there are a lot of people who, like, took a trip to San Francisco this weekend to go watch like the greatest players in the world all get together and play basketball. So I don't want to discredit like your common fan. I think there's like people are missing the boat on who the common fan is and what the common fan is pulling for. Social media taints everything. Like, yeah, you hear a ton about this and a ton about free agency, a ton about trades, you know, on social media, but you show up and there's, you know, 18,000 fans at Golden One Center. And of those 18,000, there's probably, you know, 12,000 who have social media and 6,000 that don't know what's going on with everything and don't know what's happening and don't know the whole why Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox don't follow each other on, you know, or don't even care why they don't follow each other on Instagram anymore.
Then we lost Kyle Madsen.
Did we lose Kyle?
His mic might be cooked.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, he'll be back in here. So let's hop in here. Mitch, let's get your call real quick. Mitch, what's up?
How we doing, guys?
Good. What's up, Mitch?
Yeah, not much. You know, it's great having this. Well, you guys had a good weekend. You deserve it. By the way, they're going to call the A's, the Oakland A's. They have to get rid of the owner. Are they like Madonna? Just one name? Call them Sacramento. That's where they play. It's like I hate when the Giants and Jets. They're in New Jersey. Call them New Jersey Giants and Jets. That's it. I wish they would bring up Devin Carter. I don't know what sense it falls. We know he's a bust. I know he's 6'5", 6'4", so that's pretty good. And please, I wouldn't mind them not making the playoffs. Get a chance for Cooper or those two guys from Rutgers. And I read that Cooper Flagg might stay in the college. They got to talk to the guy. He's got to go. He's one and done. He's going to be the top pick. I want to hopefully Sacramento has a chance to get Cooper Flagg.
Thanks, Mitch.
Appreciate there you the go. Call. I love it.
If missing the playoffs means the Kings get Cooper Flagg, great.
Oh, yeah, lose every game the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Just straight up, every game the rest of the season.
Mitch seems like he's got it figured out.
He does.
If that's it, well, he brought up Devin Carter, which is another thing that I wanted to get to today, because does the Markelle Fultz signing mean that Devin Carter's rookie season is just over?
Oh, pretty much. Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I mean, okay. No, the next 10 to, what do we say, 11 games? I would say Devin Carter's season's over. After we get done with those 11 games, if the Kings are a game under 500 or they're two games over 500 and they're now in the 11th spot and it's not a race for the play-in as much as it is like a foregone conclusion that you're not going to make the playoffs, then you bring Devin Carter back and you get him on the court and you let him play out the rest of the season.
Are they going to do that, though, with 16 games left? Like, everything they've done to this point, to me, looks like a team going, hey, just do whatever you can to get into the dang postseason.
Yeah.
Whatever, just to throw players together and let's see if we can just talent our way to the 8th seed. And that's why I don't think you're going to see a point where they just pull the plug unless they lose, like, 9 in a row here.
Yeah, I think it'll be like,
I don't think they're going to do that.
If it happens, it'll probably be like the last 7 or 8 games of the season. But I think Markelle Fultz just gives you like a seasoned hand, you know, somebody who can, if you need like some backup minutes, sure. If you have an injury, he might have to play a little bit more. But overall, I don't think you're going to invest heavily in him as a player at this point. I would be shocked to see him come out and play 15, 20 minutes a game. You know, again, he was on the bench last game in uniform, which, you know, is neither here nor there. I did not think that there was any way he was going to play. He hasn't played in over 9 months. So, like, what exactly are we doing here? And I'm not saying don't go sign him. Now you're going to give him an opportunity. Now you have a backup point guard. He's going to have a week to really, like, I assume he's been in Sacramento. I assume he's been working out with the training staff. I assume they're gearing him up, making sure he goes through contact and all that stuff. But, like, this is a return to play situation as much as anything. And
sure.
I do think that he's a better player today than Devin Carter, just straight up. Like, Devin Carter doesn't have the experience. He's, again, a young player behind the eight ball who missed 7 months or 8 months of basketball action. To thrust him back into the starting lineup, well, not the starting lineup, but into the rotation in early January, like, it was a disaster, and I feel bad for him. He may have wanted that, but as a franchise, you have to do what's best for the player. Not what the player wants, not what you want. You have to do what's best for the player. And a lot of times what's best for the player is for him to sit and watch and learn and go play in the G League and get a bunch of minutes, not one game, and grow as a player and get up to speed and learn how to play. So we don't watch a kid go out there and 3 minutes in, he's huffing and puffing, and everyone's like, is there something wrong with him? Like,
right.
Like, is he a chain smoker? Like, why is he breathing like that? He's 21 years old, and, like, I don't understand. And it's like the basketball, like, live action, NBA action is way different. The speed, the pace, everything is way different than anything you can simulate in a gym.
No doubt. And he said that. So, Sean Cunningham, friend of the program, the Kings beat Sean Cunningham. He went down and talked to Devin Carter, and Devin Carter more or less said what you kind of just said, like, I haven't gotten to play basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Because even leading up to the draft, if he's doing anything, it's a workout. It's not like doing things to get better at hoop. And so I think this is the right thing for him, where you go to the G League, he's going to get so much more value there, and he might be the best player on the floor every night.
Mm-hmm.
But you're at least playing, you're at least getting your legs back, you're getting your wind back, you're getting experience being the primary ball handler, which is, if he's going to play for the Kings, kind of what they're going to need from him.
Yep.
So I think that's probably what's best for him. And then with Markelle Fultz specifically, I kind of think he is going to play. And I don't know if it'll be 20 minutes. That might be a lot. But they need somebody besides Malik Monk to be able to bring the ball up the floor and organize the offense like a little. And if he provides anything defensively, like, man, he's going to have to play.
No, I think you're right, but not in the first like week, the first 2 weeks. Again, in all honesty, Markelle Fultz could use a G League assignment. Like, he could use going out and playing 35 minutes in a couple of games and getting his win back, you know, playing more than, you know, 6 minute segments in a game. And that might be all he gets, right? Mm-hmm. So he might play 12 minutes a night. I would caution people, like, where are you going to steal those 12 minutes? Because they're already like a major, major minute crunch mm-hmm. with these guys. And sure, you can start taking minutes away from veteran players, but that also, like, that's not as easy. You know, we talk about like taking a starter's job and saying, hey, we need somebody to go to the bench. That's one thing. Taking their minutes is a whole other thing. They want to play. And so like, there's a possibility here, but a lot of the minutes we're talking about, what do you want to see? No Jake LaRavia minutes or 12? Do you want to see no Trey Lyles minutes or 12? Do you want to see 24 minutes of Keon Ellis or 12? Like, so right. Pick your poison. And so it's not going to be easy to fit somebody in, especially somebody who doesn't know your system, somebody who isn't a shooter at all, like not at all, like mm-hmm. a sub 30% 3-point shooter for his career, a good passer, mm-hmm. a decent defender, all of these things, but still, like, maybe he works, maybe he doesn't, but trying to find out on the fly, I would much rather have a player who, you know, again, not to say that I'm out on Markelle Fultz, but like, there's a big difference between a player who's been playing in the G League or a player who gets bought out and has been playing 15, 20 minutes a night for a team in the NBA, and you sign that guy versus a guy who hasn't played in 9 months. And so you have to get him up to speed. And once you get him up to speed, like, what do you have? And who is he? And who is he in right. your system? And I don't think we know the answer to any of that yet.
It feels like the Devin Carter pick kind of set the tone for everything this season has become.
Amen.
Where they drafted another point guard, and it was like, that's weird.
Foreshadowing.
Another one of those.
Foreshadowing, Kyle.
Right. And then he's right. And then he was hurt. And then when he came back, it's like, I wasn't quite ready. And it Wait. Just that entire thing, it went from they're gonna trade that pick and they're gonna get a wing, and oh my god, here we go. This is gonna be. And then they draft a guy who isn't going to be have any kind of impact in his rookie year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
and I just want to correct,
especially when a guy like,
I want to correct something you said. You said gets hurt. No, he was already hurt. He was already hurt when
Good
they,
point.
Yeah. And I mean, if you're going to draft an NBA ready player who can't play for 7 or 8 months, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like either you're drafting an NBA ready player to help the rotation today, or you're not, just like straight up. So I don't know. Like it's an odd pick, but it also, like, it does foreshadow everything that happens from then on. Like, this whole entire season feels like that was the beginning of something, because you were trying to go get a guy like Cam Johnson or a guy like Kyle Kuzma with that pick, and then instead of taking that leap forward, you took a player who wasn't going to play forever and who now, you know, he's going to end his rookie career. Maybe he's played 150 minutes. Maybe not. Like, that's where we're heading at this point. And like, I feel for him because he's, you know, it's not his fault. He was hurt. But at the same time, like, it does feel like this is sort of a something that feels like the whole entire season looks exactly like this.
You think there's any chance he was drafted with them knowing, hey, De'Aaron might not be here after this season? Maybe it was a pick for the future rather than, because, like, I mean, the only way to see is, like, Monty in this front office expected this team to win 50 or so games, so you could waste a pick on a guy who's not going to play for a while. Like,
yes.
I'm not sure what they were thinking.
I think that's a very real thing.
Yeah, hindsight is 2020. Like, we can look back now and go, oh, okay. Maybe you knew something different. Like, when the Kings kept drafting DeMarcus Cousins' replacement, and DeMarcus kept saying, why do you keep drafting my replacement, and then talking about an extension? And they're like, oh, no, we're extending you, but we're going to draft Willie Cauley-Stein. And then the next year, we're going to draft Yorgos Papagiannis with the 13th pick. We're going to spend two lottery picks at your position, but you're the guy. You're a franchise guy. Yeah. Interesting, right? How when you take a step back, you're like, hey, that's interesting how that worked out.
Do you know who I would super take on the Kings right now?
Uh-oh.
Khalil Ware. Can you imagine if they had Khalil Ware running around for 19, 20 minutes a night?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
But hey, couldn't do that because he was only 20.
Or Wells, or we just saw Tristan Da Silva come through and play for Orlando, or Dalton Connect. Like, and that's, it, this isn't, it's not about Devin Carter. It's about, like, putting your resources into a different position that you lack. You know, like, there's so many of them that were in this draft that you're just like, oh.
If the problem was, like, readiness and experience, you defeat the purpose by drafting a guy who wasn't going to be able to even play in basketball games until January.
Yeah.
So, If the guy was going to need a chance to develop anyway, why not take one of the younger guys at the higher ceiling who actually plays a position of need?
Always been the question, Kyle. Like,
I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
There are players around. Like, if you knew you were going to have to move Malik Monk into the starting lineup, all of a sudden there's a whole group of players, mostly from Sacramento, that are sitting right there and you could have drafted that would have made sense as your sixth man, right?
Yes.
Like, you could say, oh, well, we don't know about Keon Ellis. It's like, okay, that's fine if you don't know about Keon Ellis. That's fine if that's the way you're going into the offseason, right? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't excuse, like, skipping players that, you know, would have made perfect sense if you were going to pull the plug on, you know, move him into the starting lineup, right? And that's
right.
That's just where I always get confused about, like, it is about, it's a complex thing that you have to develop a team over the course of years, and you're always mixing pieces, and you have the draft, which is this one thing, but you know what I mean? It's not just some, like, real basic puzzle you're trying to figure out, but you still can't skip, you know, like, major positions of need. And I don't get it. You're right. Khalil Ware was a 15th pick. Jared McCain, Sacramento 16. Kid, 16th pick, Dalton Connect, 17th, Tristan Da Silva. Like, there are all of these players that play positions that you probably could have used
And all going to teams that, because during, in the lead up to the draft, it was the discussion around Sacramento was like, well, if you're going to use this pick, it has to be somebody who can play now, that can contribute this year. And then you go look, like, Miami is a team that always wants to be competitive. Mm-hmm. Philly is a team that wants to be competitive. The Lakers, a team that always wants to be competitive. Orlando, a playoff team that was going to be in the playoffs again. All figuring out ways to draft rookies and integrate them into their teams immediately. Like, this is just the, and again, this is less about Devin Carter, the player, because maybe Devin Carter plays a bunch in the G League this year and comes out next year in Summer League and dominates and looks really good and looks like at least a rotational NBA player by the time next season starts and everything looks okay. But right now, where we sit on February 18th, where we went from preseason talking about 50 plus wins to, hey, can they hang on to a play-in spot? And then you have all these players who went directly after Devin Carter who are contributing on teams that are going to be in the postseason.
It's a tough look, man.
It's It's a really, really, really difficult pill to swallow.
Well, that, and I just really feel bad for Devin, because it's not like he wanted to get injured, and it's not like he doesn't want to be out there. Like, it's just, it's almost impossible to miss all of training camp, to miss all of the buildup to training camp, the summer that you spend with the training staff that's, like, building you up into the player you're going to be, working out some of the kinks in your game, assessing your game before you get there, working on your three-point shot, tightening all of these things up, converting you from a part-time basketball player to a full-time basketball player that does it for a living. It's a totally different world. And to start out so far behind is tough. Not only so far behind, but with a major surgery and major rehab for 6 months. It's just tough.
Really tough. Eve Misi, 21st, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some players here that, you know, like even a guy like Ryan Dunn that goes all the way at 28, like, looks like a player. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Collier looks like a player. Like, there are guys that could have helped you. The like, look back on this off season is going to be a tough one, because you really put yourself with multiple moves into very specific areas that were uncomfortable. And
it would be such an easier, what's that, like, loss to L to hold, like, loss to take, I guess is the phrasing I'll use here. If Devin Carter was a 6'7", 6'8" wing player.
Yeah. Well, that
at least, because then at least like, okay, I see the vision. It just didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it was a position they didn't necessarily need. I mean, they need it now that they've traded De'Aaron Fox and they don't have another point guard, but it was a position they didn't need. And now he's not even helping when you actually do need that position.
Yeah.
It just, it's a miss from every conceivable angle. At least for this year, we'll see how Devin Carter develops. Hopefully he's a starting caliber player next year, and we'll be lauding the pick, but right now it's a tough pill to swallow for sure. All right. We've got the handoff coming up. Is that what's next?
Maybe.
That is what's next. We got the handoff coming up.
It's your show, right, man.
One of D'Lo or Casey, I don't know. Somebody's going to be here. We're going to go and pay some bills. He's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insider, and we're sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. He's James. I'm Kyle. We're hanging out with you until noon. Then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC, and they will take you up to 4 o'clock right here on Sacramento Sports Leader. So we were talking at the break about the NBA draft and just kind of continuing our discussion about Devin Carter. And we got into the idea of drafting for need versus best player available. And you were making the point that by the time you get to where the Kings were in the draft, the best player available and need are a little bit easier to marry, or at least it should be, right?
Yeah, I think best player and fit are two totally different things at that point. Fit or need. Like, when you get to 13th in the draft, you should be looking at a tier of players. You shouldn't be looking at, this wasn't, you know, again, we can go back through the draft and we can talk about, I've always asked this question of, like, Sam Vecenie from The Athletic, like, how many player draft is this? And when you ask that question, it's very specific. It's like, oh, well, this is a 4-man draft, or this is a 6-man draft. You know, we talked about it the other day when Roy Hibbert decided to pull out of the draft at the last second. And instead of the Kings getting either Yi Jing Lee or Roy Hibbert, Roy Hibbert pulled out, and next thing you know, Spencer Hawes falls to the Kings, and the Kings had to draft Spencer Hawes because he was the 10th best player, right? So there are drafts that are very specific, but when you get to number 13, I've never heard of a 13-man draft. And when you get past like 10 or 11, there's usually a segment of players that are all around the same like grade. And as somebody who has a deficiency on your roster and you don't know how you're going to fix that deficiency, and someone who has been using the 13th pick to go out and shop for that deficiency that you know you have. And that's why we hear guys like Cam Johnson. That's why we hear guys like, again, Kyle Kuzma, that could have been acquired for the 13th pick along with other stuff. Mm-hmm. It's very clear you knew what your need was. And instead of addressing whatever it was with that pick, even if you still knew you were going to go chase DeMar DeRozan, you still know that DeMar DeRozan's 35, and 2 years from now, you might be able to have a replacement. In fact, if you thought that DeMar DeRozan might be on the table and might be one of the players that you're looking at, you probably should have even looked at younger players. You shouldn't have just like put yourself in a situation where I got to get a college junior or college or an old sophomore or a senior. You could have opened up your entire book of draft players at that point and said, it's okay for me to draft a 19 or 20-year-old player at this position because I know I've just bought myself, I'm going to buy myself a couple of years with DeMar DeRozan. Now, again, you don't know if you're getting DeMar DeRozan for sure at that point, but what you do know is that you're striking out with these other pieces that you're chasing, and your field of who it is, whether it's free agency or it's via trade, is shrinking, and you should probably start looking more long-term, better fit. Like, how is it going to work out long, you know, with whatever player you're going after?
Let's bring in Damian Barling for the handoff. D'Lo and Casey coming up here at noon.
Allegedly.
According to sources, D'Lo and Casey coming up at noon.
Yeah.
Do you agree with the idea that the Devin Carter pick kind of set the table for everything this Kings season has become?
Sure. Makes sense. It sucks.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah, it's awful. Like, it was such a... I don't know. I walked in a little bit on what you guys were talking about here. You're trying to win immediately. Like, everything that they're doing from the DeMar DeRozan signing, and obviously this was a team that was capable of winning right now, but from the DeMar DeRozan signing to the De'Aaron Fox trade being about Zach LaVine, everything is winning immediately. The Devin Carter thing is a complete outlier. Like, sir, what are you doing here? You're out 6 months, and now we're going to force you into this this situation where we need you to play. We need you to – not only do we need you to play, we need you to be good. And, sir, you're none of those things. And it is it's – man, when you when you go through the front office, man, that is a massive black eye on this front office, that Devin Carter pick right now. Now, maybe he turns out to be the greatest player in history, but good Lord Almighty, he does not look like it right now.
Well, that
and even if he winds up being that, you're still going to be fired before then.
And it left you with so many needs. It left you with so many needs. And you can say best player versus, you know, fit or needs, but you have to address these things with very small windows. The draft is one window. Free agency is the next. Like, and then we get into trades, but that happens way later. Like, if you can't address the need and any other function, like, why would you not address a need with the pick? And so it's tough. I feel bad for Devin because I don't think this is about Devin. It's strictly, and even if I believe them, like, I don't think that they knew that Devin Carter was going to be out 8 months, 6 to 8 months.
Well, okay. If that's true, then they need to be fired.
Yeah.
I mean, if what you just said is even remotely accurate, the front office needs to be fired. Because I'm not throwing anyone under the bus here. But I know people who knew. Okay. I didn't know if that was acknowledged or not. If James knew, the front office had to have known. Like, I've always believed the front office knew.
I hope so. And if they were drafting for value, I get it. Like, if you think that he was a top five or six pick and then he fell to you at 12.
That's
tough. But again, that's not who you were as a team. You're a team who's trying.
That's it.
Who got stagnant the year before and needed a boost and needed to do something different. And you weren't able to accomplish that with that pick. And again, I'm not saying they should have drafted somebody. Like, whether you trade it or you figure you open the pool up to a larger group of players, whatever it might be, either way, you had to understand that you might not be the person who gets to see that come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you need to draft for best player available, or you need to draft to, like, at least fill the position afterwards. You know, like, again, if you're going to go out and sign DeMar DeRozan, that's fine. You got a 35-year-old dude. Then get the 20-year-old trains behind DeMar DeRozan for 2 years, plays spot minutes, but is growing as a player and gives you the length and the athleticism. So when you face big teams and big players, you have somebody who can go out there and play minutes.
Right.
And as of now, I mean, they even went out and signed Jordan McLaughlin. Mm-hmm. Like, as soon as free agency opened, they signed Jordan McLaughlin as your backup point guard. You already had Keon Ellis. You already had Kevin Huerter. Like, that's three guards, and they're not your starters.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just weird.
It's just, even if that is the case, like, they said, wow, Devin Carter was one of the three best dudes in this draft. He fell all the way to 13. What an amazing stroke of luck for us. That's such a overlooking everything wrong with the roster. It just doesn't, that doesn't track to me, given everything that this team needed to do to move forward. Like, they weren't, like, James, you said it, they don't, this, that's not where this team is, where you can just go, oh, great, a good value pick, nice, not gonna play for 6 months, but we'll just bring this guy in. Like, no, then you're still gonna be short players.
Yeah,
figuratively and literally.
Super tough.
And here we are,
stink,
on February 18th. What?
I'm so frustrated with this basketball team, man. Like, I'm trying not to be, like, and that'll be a conversation today about, like, Friday's show did have, like, a tone to it.
Oh, it's dark.
Because of the loss to New Orleans. And when you lose to a, you know, a bottom four team, like, that's just, I don't know how to sugarcoat this stuff for you know, the people who listen to this show, for Kings fans. I had felt that way, really, going back to the Dallas game, where it's like, I can't wrap my brain around this team being good anymore. But they beat Dallas. It was like, hey, that was okay. That's how you. So I think I'm just sinking into, like, this is how we're going to survive. Is it, like, whether it's DeMar or there has to be one guy who goes superhuman. And if you have it, you've got a shot. If you don't, and you get, whether it's solid performances, okay performances, bad performances, you risk losing to the Pelicans. Like, that's a bad basketball team that had one guy go superhuman. CJ went nuts, and that's why they won. DeMar went nuts against Dallas. That's why the Kings won. They actually contained CJ, you know, that second go around, and had some guys put up good performances. Like, all right, that's good. Just get through the break with. We will pause all overarching bad feelings if you go into the All-Star break with four straight wins.
Yep.
You didn't. And that last night was so brutal, because not only did you lose, everybody else won. Not figuratively everybody else, literally everybody else. From the Clippers to the Warriors to the Timberwolves to the Mavericks. Mavs. Everyone who was in your eyesight won. And you dropped games, you gave the Warriors one, and now the Warriors are winning championships. Warriors are winning the championship, and they're probably going to go through Sacramento in the play-in to do it. So congratulations to Draymond Green.
Even as you, like, you bring so that up, it's not even that, as much as it is about, like, everybody taking a step forward and you taking one back, it's that three games over 500 with 27 games left versus one game, and then you start doing the math on every other game the rest of the way.
Yeah.
It just becomes so brutal. That one game means two in the standings.
Yep.
And it is so brutal, because it's nearly impossible to make up, because you don't get another grouping of 12 win teams that you're playing.
That 4 day stretch near the end of March is a bitch.
Oh yeah.
It's crazy, bro.
It's insane. I mean, it's all at the. I mean, it's a great day for Kings. It's a great 4 day stretch for Kings fans who get to see Giannis and then Tatum and Brown and then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But damn, good luck to the Kings.
And that Celtics OKC is a back to back, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong. I think that's 3 and 4.
It is 3 and 4.
Yeah.
The 20th to 12th. Cool. Oh, no.
Yeah, no, it's awesome.
Yeah, the 22nd, 24th, 25th.
If they make it, they're going to earn the hell out of it.
Facts.
Like, that's
facts. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's, well, then on top of that.
All right, we got to
go.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, man.
Stop talking, everybody. It's over.
It goes into a 6-game road trip right after that. 6 games. All right.
He's James Hamm. Damian Barling, D'Lo and KC coming up next. Jesse Tapia, appreciate you hanging out with us today, man. And we'll be back with you tomorrow at 10 a.m. right here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. Until then, drink water, be nice, people.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.